You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. That's the same place you go to make a pledge, wdiy.org. December, we think of charitable giving. Most charitable giving is done during the month of September. We don't want you to forget about WDIY, especially for those folks who might be new members. That's one way to do it, wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is December 11th, 2013. The markets were down today, the Dow closing at 15,843, the NASDAQ at 4,003, and the S&P closed at 1782. Last week, we had a guest, Ben Tanaglia, on to discuss what a fiduciary is and as it pertains to trusts, including having an investment policy statement. We talked about asset allocation, risk tolerance, and various other things. So I thank Ben for being on. Tonight, we are talking about year-end tax planning, your last-ditch effort to make some things happen. I do have a guest this evening, Rod Young. He'll be joining us momentarily. He's a CPA and a CFP and financial advisor. And we are live, and we are going to talk about tax planning. And it's not just year-end tax planning. Rod says it's multi-year planning because we have to know what's happening next year to see what we should be doing for the end of the year as well. We will take live calls this evening. So someone will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. We'll do the best to answer them. And it's Brad, I believe, who's answering the phones tonight, Neil. And Jeff is out. If Jeff's listening, I hope you're feeling better, Jeff. Sorry to hear that. The number is 610-758-8810. And if you ever have questions when we're not on the air, you can go through yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, my guest this evening is Rod Young, CPA, CFP, and financial advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors, and frequent host of this show when I am not here. Rod, thanks for being here.
Hey, Lori, great to be back.
Okay, Rod, so I assume people probably know a lot about you already because you are on fairly often. So talk to me about what you do and why tax planning is such a big part of it, and then we'll get started with.
Sure. Like you, Lori, I am a CPA and CFP. I'm not an AEP.
Accredited estate planner.
Yes. So,
But you're a PFS.
But I am a PFS, which is personal financial specialist. So we have an equal number
That's
of
right.
letters after our names. You know, what we do in terms of financial plan, you know, income taxes, affect all areas of our financial life, which is why this is such a good topic to be talking about on December 11th. We still have 20 days left in the year.
Lots of time.
Lots of time. In CPA time, that's a lot of time. And, you know, there may still be things that people can do between now and the end of the year to help this year's tax situation, or at least to begin to set up well for next year's tax situation. I think the taxes are great to talk about at this time of year, and it affects, you know, every financial transaction we have, taxes come into play.
Yeah, so it's a big part of our financial decisions, folks. So let's jump right in. I'm going to give a broad brush of what we hope to touch on tonight, and I'm going to give an overview, and then Rod and I are probably going to run through these hot topics fairly quickly because there's too much to talk about and so much to talk about. So we just want to bring awareness this evening and then spend hopefully the last half of the show actually talking about tax planning strategies. So if you do have questions, you're welcome to call in, because if it's something that you're wondering about, it might be something that our listeners are also wondering about. So that phone number is 610-758-8810. Now, the overview is that there's new tax provisions for 2013, which include same-sex marriage decisions, health care reform, individual tax rules and rates, extended education benefits, extended tax benefits. And when we say extended, it means they're not permanent, they're not forever, they're just extended. Also traditional year-end planning strategies. So that's what we want to do in the last half of the show. So we do have a lot to cover. We do want to take your questions. The number is 610-758-8810. You can either call in live and talk on air. If you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Brad. He'll write it down and bring that into the studio. A lot of the information that we're going to be reviewing tonight comes from CCH Seminars, which is a Walter Kluwer's business, and they are just tops in their field, so I want to give them kudos for that. And in fact, a lot of the knowledge that we have comes from our continuing education that we get through CCH seminars and through various other tax resources that we have. So we are under constant education, 80 hours for our CPA every couple years. And then we also have education requirements for our CFPs as well. So we do try to keep up with everything.
We couldn't do it without CCH and other, you know, services that we use.
Yeah, so I like to mention them, and they, you know, don't even know I'm using this stuff tonight, but that's why I like to mention them. So first, the overview, Rod. Can we do some high-level tax highlights of what's going on for 2013? What did we see happen?
Sure, and I mean, you touched upon, a couple of things already, but maybe just to start out, this is one of the busiest years of tax changes that we have seen, Lori, and a decade, at least.
With a feeling of more permanence to those changes.
Yes.
Sometimes we have these little temporary things, but it feels bigger this time for sure.
Sure. We have new tax brackets. Mm-hmm. We have entirely new taxes. Mm-hmm. We have some things that have been temporarily extended, some things that have been made permanent. We've got new tax rates on different types of income and all kinds of different thresholds on where those tax rates begin and new taxes begin to kick in. So it's a year of planning, without a doubt. And that planning, like I said earlier, it starts with this year, and we still have time for planning this year, but it is absolutely going to continue, into next year, facing all of these new rules and taxes.
And we have a few things that are expiring, but I didn't write those down. So I know that the sales tax deduction, I think, is going to expire at the end of this year. So there might have been a couple other things, so I'm not going to go into those exactly. So lots of new taxes, tax rates.
Yep.
So the first one I want to touch on before we go to our first break is the same-sex marriage decision, that there was DOMA, which is the Defense of Marriage Act, which was, I think, initiated back in 1996, and that was overturned, or at least parts of it were overturned. And that part that was overturned was recognizing marriage at the federal level for some of the benefits that married couples have that now same-sex couples are going to have, and that is for things like income tax filing, gift taxes, estate taxes. There were cases that went to the Supreme Court, and in particular, a couple that had been together for 20 years, had been legally married in Canada, came here, and two women, it was called, I just lost the name, the Windsor case, I think, and she had a partner who died, and there was a $358,000 federal estate tax. If they were a heterosexual couple, there would not have been a federal estate tax, so she brought it to the Supreme Court. She won, and now they recognize same-sex marriage, so that's going to help in filing status, marriage penalty relief, personal exemptions, standard deduction, spousal IRAs, inheritances and things like that.
Even employment employee benefits, pensions and what have you.
And all kinds of impact, but it's still very, there's still a maze of rules and regulations and that will apply, so you have to be very careful and know where there was the legal marriage, know where you're domiciled, when you apply for benefits. There's all different rules that still have not been completely granted to these couples. So lots of planning around there. And just know that in 2013, if you were legally married in a state that recognized legal marriage for federal purposes, you will be filing married, filing joint. You're not going to have a choice, but you may have a choice going looking back a couple years on any tax return years that are still open. So you may be able to amend and change your filing status. So that's just an FYI. There's more rules and things to know around that, but not enough time to talk about it. Just be aware. Okay, so we are ready, I think, for our first break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion. We're going to talk about how health care reform has affected some of the taxes that we're going to be looking at for 2013. So when we come back, the phone number to call is 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. WDIY is a listener-supported radio station. The programs you hear on WDIY are about you, for you, and in a very real sense, by you. Please help keep the pledge drive short by making a contribution today. Visit WDIY.org, and please give as generously as you can. Thank you.
Okay, Neil, thank you for my Vivaldi music. I love that. I haven't heard that in a while. I went and saw the Philadelphia Symphony a couple Sundays ago, who did the Four Seasons, and I, like, cried. I was in heaven. I love Vivaldi so much. So we are back. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have with me in the studio this evening Rod Young, who's a CPA and CFP, Certified Financial Planner and Financial Advisor. We're talking about an overview of some of the tax changes and tax implications that we're going to have for 2013. And after we go through that overview, probably in the second half of the show, we're actually going to dig into all the tax planning that we can do knowing some of these rules that we're talking about at the top of the show. So we just talked about same-sex marriage and how those marriages that have been legally performed in another state for federal purposes will be recognized, but probably not at the state level unless you were married and domiciled in a state that recognizes same-sex marriages. So just be aware of that. Healthcare reform, Rod, snuck in a few tax changes for us. Can you give us an overview on how health care reform has changed and impacted our 2013 plan?
Sure. I promise not to mention the word website at all when talking about health care reform. There are two new taxes associated with the Affordable Care Act that came into effect here in 2013. There's a new additional Medicare tax on wages, and there's a new tax that they are referring to as the net investment income tax. And so, as its name implies, that tax is applied to certain types of investment income. These taxes kick in at certain gross income thresholds. For the new Medicare tax on wages, it's a relatively small tax rate. It's 0.9%. And for single tax filers, it takes effect at gross wages of $200,000 and above, gross earned income, mm-hmm. and for married taxpayers at $250,000 of gross earned income is where this new 0.9% tax. So for those of you who have incomes at that level, You may have noticed at some point during the year where the amount of the percentage of Medicare tax they were taking out of your pay jumped up by 0.9%.
Can I tell you something that I didn't know, Rod? I was at a seminar last week, and they said that the employer, if the wages are above a certain amount, the employer withholds the 0.9%, which I knew, but for some reason I thought that if you were married filing joint and your W-4 showed you were married filing joint, and remember the threshold on that is 250, mm-hmm. I thought they wouldn't start collecting that extra tax unless it was you were at 250. They start collecting it at 200, whether you're single or married, it doesn't matter.
That's correct. So for someone, a single income household that's above the 250, they will actually have had a little bit too much of that tax taken out, and then that will just get reconciled when they file their 2013 income tax return.
So they could be surprised. So if you had a married couple with the husband just working and he made 250,000, they would have withheld the extra 0.9% on from 200 to 250. Mm-hmm. They file their tax return. He gets a $250,000 exclusion because he's married. So they will have over withheld the Medicare. When they file their tax return, they'll get a little refund.
It'll come out in the wash in terms of how much refund they get or how much tax they still owe.
Okay, so a married couple who each makes $200,000, and together they make $400,000.
So they will have had none of this 0.9% tax withheld, mm-hmm. but they will owe this tax in your example, on $150,000. So they, will have a surprise in the opposite direction because they will owe that 0.9% tax that hasn't been withheld.
Right. Okay, so that's one of the new taxes. And you also had said wages, but you also mentioned gross earned income. So let's talk about what earned income means besides wages.
Sure. So for someone who is self-employed, maybe files a Schedule C on their income tax return. This tax applies to their net income from self-employment. It's absolutely earned income, so it doesn't apply to your interest income, your dividend income, capital gains, doesn't apply to your pensions, to IRA withdrawals, anything like that. It is strictly that income earned by working.
Okay, so that's the Medicare tax on wages and self-employment income or earned income, and it's 0.9%. You said, so luckily it's not on that other stuff, but wait, we have another tax.
Right, they took care of that for us.
So talk about that one.
There is a new, starting with 2013, tax on net investment income. The tax rate is 3.8%. It's a tax that is applied to interest income, dividend income, short-term capital gains, long-term capital gains, rental income, certain annuity income, not your pensions and what have you, but certain non-qualified annuity income, royalties. So there's quite a bit of income that is subject to this, to this new tax, and it's a higher tax rate. It's 3.8%.
Okay. 3.8% on net investment income over the same thresholds we had?
Same thresholds
for the wages.
For wages, except it's not based on how much wage income you have. It's those thresholds now are thresholds of adjusted gross income. So for a single taxpayer, it's not how much you make. It's what's the total adjusted gross income on your tax return. But it is $200,000 for single taxpayers and $250,000 for joint filers.
Okay, and it's the lower of the amount that the net investment income exceeds those thresholds.
Or the amount of net investment income you have. That is absolutely correct.
And that's a little trick that some people might not think about. And really, you think about the numbers that we're talking about seem quite high, but at the same time, we're seeing more and more people who may have things like that when they're converting money or doing pensions or getting severance payouts. So it is, we do see $250,000 on $1,000 on tax returns sometimes. So it is happening more frequently. You have to be aware of it. We did have a call come in. We'll take when we get back from our break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. It's off air, so we'll take that. We'll answer that question when we come back. 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition, traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. Thank you, Neil. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. And I don't want folks to forget that we are doing a December, you know, I don't know if we call it a pledge drive for December. So if you would like to pledge anything to WDIY, you can do so through the website, wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. Neil, is the information there and readily accessible for folks who go to the website?
Absolutely, and you can pledge online securely right there. All the questions are there. All the information you need to fill out.
There's a link or something? Does it say? Okay.
It's right on the front page, and you can do that anytime.
Okay. And that is a tax deduction for you as well. And we did have a call come in from Albert in Macungie, and he had asked, is there any limit for a tax-deductible donation, and can you put together multiple receipts to create a larger tax deduction? And I think that second question, Rod, probably is if he's worried that there's, like, a limit. And there's not really a limit, so to speak, Albert. There are some limits, and I can tell you about those in a second. But first, you have to itemize. Sometimes people remember back years ago, we didn't have to itemize to get charitable deductions. Oh, boy, Rod and I remember that.
Yep.
We didn't have to itemize to get charitable deductions. So now you do have to itemize. So, you know, at first blush, when you ask, is there a limit, maybe that's the direction you were going. So you do have to itemize. And let's say you do itemize, then you do get a benefit from your charitable giving. And that applies even for people who might be subject to alternative minimum tax. So you do get a benefit, whether it's a cash donation, appreciated property, or stuff you're giving to the goodwill. They do all have different treatment, though. A cash contribution, if you donate cash, it could be limited to half your page one income. So if your page one income is $100,000 and you decide to donate $100,000 of cash, you're only going to get to take a deduction for $50,000, and then the balance gets to carry forward for 5 years. If you donate long-term appreciated property, the deduction is limited to 30% of your page one income. And if you donate property such as items to Goodwill, like clothing and furniture, then if it's more than $500, you have to show receipts, dated signed receipts with a detail of all of the items that you gave away, like, you know, clothing and bags. And some people get very detailed, you know, number of shirts and pants and things like that. If you do more than a certain amount, that $500, you need to report it on a special form 8283 and list the name of the charitable organization, the address, zip code, value, description. It's a little bit more complicated. So, Rod, do you have anything to add? I think I kind of covered everything there.
Yeah, I think the only one thing I would add is we get asked often about donating a used car. And so there are very specific requirements for the amount of deduction that you can take for a car that you're donating to charity. So just make sure before you consider donating a car, understand what, you know, what the substantiation requirements are and what the amount of the deduction is that you're allowed to take.
Right, because charities now are required to report it on I believe it's called a 1098C, where you might be thinking you're getting a deduction for the fair market value, but if they end up selling it for, you know, $200, you're going to maybe get it for $200 or at least a minimum of $500, I think.
That's correct. And that applies to cars, boats, and planes, believe it or not. So,
oh, yeah, wow. Yeah, I could donate my plane.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Albert, I hope we helped answer your question, and I hope that we understood it correctly. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call live in on the show or give your question to Brad, and he'll bring it into the studio. So, Rod, prior to the break, we were talking about the healthcare reform and the effect on our taxes for that, the Medicare surtax, which is based either on your wages or earned income, or which is 0.9%, or the net investment income tax, which is 3.8% on net investment income over certain thresholds. It's the lower of the amount over or the net investment income itself. So if you are married filing joint, you have a page one income or page one total of $260,000 and you have investment income of $50,000, you're only over the 250 by 10. So we would have the lower of 10 versus 50 and you'd pay 3.8% on that 10. You mentioned something as we were going to the break, which I think is important.
Sure. Lori had just mentioned that those thresholds, are rather high, incomes of $200,000 and $250,000. One of the interesting things about those thresholds, unlike many other thresholds in the tax laws, these thresholds are not scheduled to be indexed for inflation. So 10 years from now, that $200,000 threshold and that $250,000 threshold will impact many more taxpayers than it does today, unless something's done to index those thresholds.
And they might not do it for a while because, interestingly, remember the AMT, the alternative minimum tax, wasn't indexed for inflation for a long, long time.
Right.
And, you know, as someone joked in a seminar, they said it used to apply to 6 people and then it ended up applying to millions of people. And we could talk about AMT maybe in the second half of the show.
Sure.
So, real quick, if you could tell me what happened to Schedule A medical expenses as part of the health care reform.
As part of health care reform, they have increased the threshold, the percentage of adjusted gross income that you need to hit before your medical expenses become tax deductible. The old threshold is 7.5%. The new threshold is 10%. There is an exception, though, for taxpayers that are age 65 or over, and I also believe there's an exception for disabled taxpayers, I believe.
And then they're going to slowly phase that out as well.
Yes.
So it's going to go to 10% for everyone eventually, and I think by 2017. So, all right, individual tax rates, those are going up as well?
Those are going up as well in a variety of areas. The basic tax brackets, there's been an old bracket that's been brought back, and that is a 39.6% tax bracket for married joint filers at taxable income. Now we're not talking gross income, we're not talking earned income, now we're talking taxable income above $450,000 and individual tax filers above $400,000.
Okay.
So that's when that 39.6% bracket kicks in. So that's one of the new tax rates we're seeing. Also, for long-term capital gains and qualified dividends, if you fall into that highest tax bracket, the 39.6% bracket, then your qualified dividends and long-term capital gains, instead of being subject to that special 15% tax rate, will now be subject to a 20% tax rate.
And I believe that's going to apply only on the amount that goes into that top bracket. So if you're only in that 39.6% bracket by a dollar, only a dollar would be subject to the 20%.
Yes.
A lot of times people don't understand that concept even on the lower bracket. So we can talk more about that when we come back from our break. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking tax planning, and we're going to get to some tax planning strategies when we get back from the break. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News, reminding you that WDIY is a radio station that's in this community and that is part of this community and that is supported by this community, which is exactly the way that it should be. The people who use this service are the largest single sources of support for it, which is how you know that it's independent. That's how you know that it's acting in your interest. That's how you know that WDIY is working to bring reliable information to you. So please make your donation today. With your help, WDIY can pay for the news and keep fund drives short. Visit WDIY.org and please give as generously as you can. Thanks.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and CFP, and I have in the studio with me this evening Rod Young, frequent host of this show. CPA and CFP as well. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Taking live calls, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Brad and he will bring it into the studio. So we gave some, you know, high level impacting legislation, what have you, that can affect people. We talked about the changes, same-sex marriage affects tax filings, healthcare reform has affected taxes that are going to apply to some people, and some folks might think it's higher net worth people, but as Rod mentioned, those thresholds that where those kinds of taxes apply are not being indexed for inflation, so it's good to be aware of them so that you can start doing some planning now going forward. Being aware of it, you can make some decisions. Let me mention really quickly alternative minimum tax. I had said alternative minimum tax for many years wasn't indexed for inflation, and every year they would put in a patch. They did finally index it for inflation. It's still not great, but it's better than it was. And there are certain exemptions. I think it's like $80,800 for married filing joint, $51,009 for single. But then there's also phase outs, going up to, so there's exemptions and then there's phase outs. It's too complicated. I'm not even going to talk about it. What I tell anybody is run tax scenarios, tax planning numbers, put it in a tax return and actually see how things impact you. Because people will say, you know, oh, I still have capital gains tax at 15%. I'm not in that higher bracket. And so if I take a $20,000 capital gain, I'm only going to pay 15% on that. And all of a sudden they put it on their return and their tax went way up more than that. Well, it's because sometimes alternative income tax kicks in and it's subjecting your ordinary income to that higher rate, not necessarily your capital gains,
right.
But your ordinary income gets taxed at a higher rate. So, but it's your capital gain income that pushed your threshold up. See? So it's really circular, interrelated calculations. I just think everybody should kind of run numbers.
There are so many moving parts in somebody's tax situation that the individual's true tax rate on any particular piece of income, I could list out 30 different tax rates right now that truly apply based on all the phase outs and rules and what have you. It's not just a couple different tax brackets we're talking about.
Well, you know, too, Rod, I had one the other day, and I've been meaning to mention this in the office, is that I did some tax planning for someone, and it was, you know, X amount of dollars. And then I threw on an extra $40,000 of capital gains, and the tax only went up like, you know, a nominal amount. And I thought, what happened? Well, prior to the capital gains, they actually were in a alternative minimum tax situation. And when I added the gains, it kind of actually threw their income like up higher. Their regular tax was higher. They ended up not having as much in alternative minimum tax. It was very strange when I was expecting it to hit them a particular way, and it didn't. And I was like, how did that happen? But it was some interplay between alternative minimum. Let me just quickly, before we start talking about some of those tax planning strategies, I just also wanted to mention some things that were extended, which were the American Opportunity Credit, which is for folks who have kids in college and you're paying tuition out of pocket, maybe in excess of any 529 contributions. You still have some money going out of pocket, and you may think, we have scholarships, we took out loans, we didn't really pay anything out of pocket because we took out a loan and the loan paid for it. Well, guess what? If you're taking out loans, that's considered out of pocket. Not that you're paying the loans, that you're actually taking out loans to pay for current tuition. So you may be eligible for the American Opportunity Credit. That has been extended, I think, through at least 2018. That was a huge extension. That is a huge credit. And people really need to do some great tax planning to make sure that they can take advantage of that credit, because it's quite big. On a $4,000 out-of-pocket tuition payment, you're talking about a $2,500 possible credit. And there's phase-outs on that. But the income, the adjusted gross income, is quite high for that. Some other things that were extended. What else was extended? Rod, where did I have my extensions?
Sure. Higher education tuition deduction has only been extended through the end of 2013, I believe, through the end of this year. So unlike that American Opportunity Tax Credit, which has been given several more years of life, another higher education
credit wasn't that, so. And that's the page one, the tuition one.
Yes, that's okay. Deduction on page one.
So we still have the lifetime learning credit. That's been around for a long time. The $250 teachers.
Yep, through 2013.
Okay, that's just through 2013. So we have some things that are expiring. So let's talk about some tax planning opportunities. When we get our hands on a tax return or a client that says, what kind of tax planning opportunities do I have? Just name off a few quick things that would come to mind quickly.
Sure.
What do
sure.
we start thinking?
Yeah, the first things that I start thinking about are that nasty thing called the alternative minimum tax.
Mm-hmm.
Capital gains, particularly short-term capital gains, given all the new tax rates on net investment income and the new 39.6% brackets. So taking losses to offset gains continues to make a lot of sense. The timing of deductions, understanding, and this is why we talked early on in the show, that tax planning is very much a multi-year discipline. Know if you're going to be in a different tax bracket from 1 year to the next, so that you can time perhaps when making an extra or special charitable contribution. Do it in the year that you're going to be in a higher tax bracket. So timing is very, very important. Deferral of income continues to be a very popular and valuable means of tax control and tax planning, and taking advantage of opportunities where you can completely avoid tax on certain types of income. Using 529 accounts for college education, doing targeted Roth conversions in particular years. I could give you some incredible examples of some Roth conversions that we've done. So those are the kind of, as you can see, I can continue to rattle off these kind of items. Understanding the difference in tax rates between qualified dividends and ordinary dividends. So those are just to name a few.
Okay, let me mention something, because as you've rattled off a few, folks, I want to remind people that sometimes, you'll be talking with your friends, your neighbors, your family, and you'll hear things that they're doing or that their advice that their advisor is giving them. And you might say, if my sibling, her advisor is saying, take losses, take losses to help protect you from, you know, gains and lower your taxes. Each person is different. And I just want to reiterate that what might be good for one person isn't necessarily the same advice for another. And I'll give a quick example. Rod was talking about someone who has a lot of short-term capital gains and harvesting some tax losses. Great strategy for a case where someone might be subject to higher tax rates, the net investment income tax, the 39.6 rate, even the 25% rate. Mm-hmm. You know, so you'd want to offset some of those short-term capital gains, which are subject to ordinary income tax. But there might be a case where someone might have short-term capital gains, and maybe they have no taxable income. So maybe they don't need to harvest losses because maybe they're out of job, something happened for whatever reason, they have high medical expenses, they end up not having any taxable income. Maybe it wouldn't be a good idea for them to harvest losses because maybe in the next year they're going to be back to normal life and have more income and want to harvest the losses later. Or we have clients who have long-term capital gains and they're in the 15% tax bracket. And those long-term capital gains, when people are in the 15% bracket with long-term capital gains or qualified dividends, they're taxed at zero.
Zero.
So we might not tell them to do losses. So the fun thing about planning, I'm not saying you were suggesting that, Rod, but I'm just pointing out that all of the options, all of the planning options that are out there, it's fascinating, and each person is different. And we have to recognize that none of this, you know, at the top of the show, we always say, you know, consult your tax advisor, because we can only educate and inform people that they need to pay attention and what they have to look at. So keep that in mind. So great ideas for planning. We'll talk about some more of the details of those, because I think 529 planning is something we want to talk about. And you had mentioned before the show talking about for people who are self-employed, maybe a solo 401k. So I want to make sure that we get to that before we run out of time. But we had someone call from Easton, and he had asked a question. He said he made $44,000 in Australian dollars while abroad. Does he need to file that with the IRS? He is an American citizen. Do you want me to cover that, or do you want to cover that?
I can start. You can chime in. As a U.S. citizen, you are responsible for paying U.S. income tax on what the U.S. tax code would call your worldwide income. So, yes, you are responsible for that, for paying tax on that $44,000 that you earned in Australian dollars, and you would need to convert those Australian dollars to U.S. dollars to determine the amount of income to report on your U.S. income tax return. The good news is that if you paid Australian tax on that income, you do have the ability to take a tax credit against your against your U.S. tax on that same income, so that you're not paying double tax, on that income.
To the extent that you would have been subjected to U.S. tax. So you don't get a tax credit for more than what you would have paid U.S. tax on, I believe. So there's a calculation. There's a form that you file. It's the 1116 for foreign income, foreign tax credits.
Sure. There's also a foreign earned income exclusion that may apply there. I forget the amount of that changes a little bit each year. It's a fairly high exclusion, so you may find that exclusion alone helps to eliminate the tax on that income.
You have to look. It's a little complicated. You actually have to look at the days you were outside of the country and how long were you outside of the country and different things to get some of those exclusions. Sometimes you have housing allowances if your employer like sent you over there. So it might be a little bit more complicated if you were abroad for some time. But basically, if you went over there for a few months, I don't know if there would be that foreign exclusion. So
sure. Bottom line is you have to report that income on a U.S. tax return
and convert it. And sometimes it also makes sense to convert it for that time. There are some general rules or, you know, averages that you can use. But I know when we've had clients with foreign investments, I had a client who was applying a flat rate, an average rate of a day. And I said, you know what, when I went in and figured out the currency exchange for the dates of purchase, the dates of sale, it worked out much better for him. And that really in those kinds of circumstances was more appropriate. Folks, if you have questions this evening, thank you for calling in. Mm-hmm. We have the number 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll have the last quarter of the show talking about tax planning strategies when we come back. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The time is 6:45. Our temperature, 26 degrees. Lehigh Valley weather tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 17. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 27. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 12. And Friday, partly sunny with a high near 31.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We do have our December pledge drive. It is the time to give, the most giving time of year, in fact. So we hope that you include WDIY in your giving plans. Please see WDIY.org for more information. I have in the studio with me this evening Rod Young. He's a CFP and CPA and frequent host of this show as well. And we are talking about tax changes for 2013 and tax planning strategies. So we're going to close out the show with some of those. If you have questions, 610-758-8810. Rod, you mentioned a bunch of different ideas, and we could do a whole show on each of the ideas.
Right, we could do a series here, sure.
Okay, and we certainly will be talking during tax season about a lot of different things with taxes, but let's hit some high-level tax planning strategies. You had mentioned looking for different items, tactical moves, harvesting losses to cover gains, deferrals, if people have 401ks, Roth conversions. So let's talk about a couple of those. Mm-hmm. 401ks, people, you and I were employed. We have an employer who provides an employer plan, a 401k. We can defer some of our wages into that plan. We're saving that money into a retirement account. And by doing that, we get a little incentive because we're not getting income taxed on that for federal purposes. And I guess our goal there, our hope there, is if we're doing it on a tax-deferred basis, it's because we're in higher tax brackets today.
During our working years, we expect
when we retire, we'll be in a lower tax bracket when we take that money out because it'll be taxed then. Some people can also put money into a Roth 401k while they're working. They're not getting the deferral for it, but it's those people who think they're actually going to be in a higher tax bracket when they retire.
Sure.
Some people might be, depending on what their situation is. So they're not getting a deduction today, but they're hoping for that future retirement account that won't be income taxable to them at all because it's has a Roth feature. People who are self-employed, what kind of options do they have?
Sure, it's a great question. Just like an employee of a company, a self-employed individual can establish their own personal 401k plan and look at the income they've earned for the year and do some calculations and put some of that earned income, that self-employment income, into the individual 401k. At this time of year, the most important thing to know as a self-employed taxpayer is to be able to establish an individual 401k. I'm sorry, to be able to make a tax-deductible contribution to an individual 401k, the plan needs to be adopted and established by December 31st. You don't have to get the money into it by December 31st, but you have to have done the appropriate paperwork to establish the plan by December 31st.
Let me reiterate that. So for folks who are self-employed, who may not have a retirement account now, quite often we'll see self-employed people might have an IRA or a SEP IRA, and they might be putting in a minimum amount, an IRA, $5,000, $5,500, $6,000, whatever it is. But if their business is doing well and they have good cash flow, maybe some cash building up in the bank, they actually could put money into a retirement account, a 401k, on a much larger basis, a bigger contribution. There's no max, there's no minimum amount. There's the, and the maximum amount is like $17,500 for an employee portion.
Mm-hmm.
If you're self-employed, you're an employee. But then as the employer portion, you could put even more. I'm getting caught up in my words. What I want to point out, Rod, is there's a lot of upside, a big amount that they can put in, but they don't have to put that in that, either.
That's correct. You could literally put in, as the, if you're making a lot of self-employment income, you could literally put in $56,000 pre-tax. If you're age 50 or over, $51,000 thereabouts, if you're underage, you know, underage 50. So much higher deduction ability than simply doing an IRA contribution,
right,
for example.
Okay, but they don't have to do
but
that much.
But they don't have to do it's that. It's all at their
so
discretion.
Flexible.
Very flexible, yes.
And then that you just have to have the plan established by the end of the year. You don't even have to have the money to put in it. You have until the due date of your tax return, including extensions to put
yes.
that money in.
Yep.
But how complicated. Oh, my gosh, Rod, if I have to set up a plan, it's so complicated. How do I do that?
It's no harder than opening an individual retirement account. It's a couple pieces of paper, a couple signatures, and you literally have until December 31st, to do it. So
the beautiful thing is sometimes people don't think they, you know, it would be beneficial to them. Maybe they're not making that much money. But if they do it, and it's almost like a safety net, meaning they might not know that their business is going to really take off next year. So it might make sense to get it established, because if cash flow provides, they could actually even start putting money into it for the next year.
Absolutely.
Next year.
Yeah. And if they establish it before December 31st and then suddenly there's an economic decline or a business decline and it turns out they didn't have the money to fund it for 2013. Okay, that's okay. There was no requirement to.
Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that these have actually been around for a while, and there are still a lot of people who aren't aware of it, even professionals.
Right.
Who aren't aware of it. So solo 401k, great opportunity. That's a good strategy. People can do a deferral. They also can adopt a Roth feature in some of these plans.
It depends. They can adopt a Roth feature, just like many companies out there have adopted and added a Roth designated Roth account to their 401k plans. These solo 401ks are also permitted to have a Roth feature. Absolutely.
Okay. Great idea there. What about Roth planning? You said you're doing some tactical moves right now. What is with Roth planning? What are we doing
sure.
there?
What we see in terms of Roth, now we're talking about Roth conversions, and this is taking dollars that are currently in a regular IRA account and converting them over to a Roth IRA and quote unquote paying tax on the amount that you convert. So what we refer to as a tactical Roth conversion is if someone has a very unique circumstance in a particular tax year, we've been able to do significant Roth conversions and pay zero income tax. An example I'm just working on right now, individual woman came to me, her father passed away, mother inherited the father's IRA. Mother needed to be moved into an Alzheimer's facility mm-hmm. at $7,500 a month for the facility. So you literally have $90,000 to $100,000 of medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So having such a large deduction, you can now take dollars in this pre-tax IRA account and convert them over to a Roth to take advantage of that medical expense deduction that otherwise would go to waste and create negative taxable
right.
income, which doesn't help you at all.
Right. And probably pay zero tax.
Zero tax.
And you can do it over a few years. You don't have to convert the whole account, folks. You can do a certain dollar amount, because sometimes when we put extra income on the return, maybe some of the Social Security is taxed. So it's not always like a dollar for dollar. Again, it's about running those numbers and hitting those sweet spots on the tax return.
Yes.
I did something similar for a client many years ago as well, and we did it over probably a few years where we took advantage of those huge medical expenses.
Sure. I had a business owner who had a unique situation a few years back and had a very significant business loss. Profitable business for years and years. Had 1 year, just because of circumstances, a very significant business loss, and we were able to convert an enormous amount from a pre-tax retirement account to a Roth IRA.
You know, that reminded me, because we still have just a few minutes left, I keep wanting to mention, because we're coming up at the end of the year, I want to mention as often as I can each week, because this little benefit's going away unless legislation comes through, and that is the qualified charitable distribution. So for those folks who are 70 and a half or older and have to take required minimum distributions, if you have not taken your required minimum distribution yet and you are charitably inclined, in lieu of you taking it and putting it on your tax return, which increases your page one income, which then maybe decreases your deductions that you can take, you could not put it on your page one return at all if you requested the distribution be made payable to a charity. So the custodian of your IRA can write the check directly to the charity. You deliver the check to the charity and you don't report the income. You don't take the deduction either. But it's a beautiful thing because it reduces your page one income, which may reduce your taxable Social Security. It may reduce your income that all of a sudden you're getting more medical deductions that you hadn't had before. And you may not even itemize. So then it's really a win-win. So think about doing a qualified charitable distribution before year end. Again, if you're someone who is 70 and a half or older with required minimum distributions, and you can do up to $100,000. And you don't have to do the whole RMD. Let's say your required minimum distribution is $10,000, and you say, Lori, that's too much. I only want to do $3,000. You can do $3,000. You can do $3,000. You could do the $10,000, or you could do up to $100,000. Great benefit. It's set to expire. They keep bringing this back and taking it away and bringing it back. It's supposed to go away at 12/31. At the end of this year. I'm hoping they bring it back.
Yeah, I think they've extended it a couple times.
Huge benefit.
It should be extended again. I agree with you.
Okay. Rod, we have probably just a few minutes. Any last quick tax planning strategy that you want to mention before we sign off here?
Boy, we've talked about a lot, Lori. I think it's important. I can't stress enough the idea of needing to be forward-looking here and be multi-year in the way that you approach your planning. You know I keep coming back to this one because I see it happen quite often, this whole idea of alternative minimum tax planning. Once you're in alternative minimum tax, a lot of times you're in it for years and years and years, but there are unique circumstances we see where someone's in alternative minimum tax 1 year and not going to be in it the next, or vice versa. And those are where we see some great tax planning opportunities as it relates to that particular tax. I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars of tax savings when you're not in it 1 year and going to be in it the next year. There's things that you can do to absolutely save tax. So that's just encouraging people to be multi-year, future-looking. So much of taxes is looking in the rearview mirror because we focus on it when we prepare the tax returns in April. So I'm just encouraging people to be a little more forward-looking with their tax planning.
And forward-looking in next year, where if they find when they do their 2013 tax return, all of a sudden they hit those thresholds, those net investment income tax or the Medicare surtax on wages, that they need to look at, could we have controlled it? Could we do some tax deferral? Could we go into some tax-exempt income? What can we do to control our tax return, to control some of those extra taxes that they could avoid maybe and still keep their money and
Absolutely.
Avoid? Just by being a little bit smarter with some decisions.
None of us like to pay taxes, but why not focus on it a little bit have some wins here,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Those wins will put a smile on your face.
Rod, how do people reach you if they would like more information?
They can reach me at 610-868-9000 at Valley National. They can reach me at ryoung@valleynationalgroup.com.
Okay, Rod, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Yep.
Next week, I am going to talk about consumer spending and trends in credit cards and finish up any other last minute tax planning. So if you do have questions that, you know, kind of came up after listening to tonight's show, I'd be happy to take questions on last minute tax planning as well. But I thought it would also be appropriate to look at some consumer spending trends since we're coming up on the holidays and people kind of go crazy. I would encourage people not to go crazy and not run up your credit card debt. That is not a nice gift to have in January. So thank you for our listeners. Thank you for Brad for coming in. Thank you, Neil, for covering for Jeff. I hope he's doing better. Thank you, Rod, for being here. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.